we'll move on to agenda paper 7.
The committee received a submission about the presentation of liabilities or assets related to uncertain tax treatment.
The submitter asks whether in its statement of financial position,
an entity presents a liability related to uncertain tax treatment as a current or deferred tax liability or as a provision. A similar question could arise for assets related to uncertain tax treatments. We conducted outreach on this matter. Paragraphs 8 to 14 summarize our findings. Paragraphs 15 to 39 present our analysis of how an entity determines how to present liabilities and assets related to uncertain tax treatments. And paragraph 40 summarizes our conclusion. Based on our analysis, we conclude that an entity presents uncertain tax liabilities as current or deferred tax liabilities in its statement of financial position. Similarly, an entity presents uncertain tax assets as current or deferred tax assets. I would like you to draw your attention to question 1 on page 13 and ask if you agree with our analysis of the requirements in IFRS standards.
Do you have an opinion on this one?
Yeah, I have an opinion. I won't necessarily express my opinion right now. I just wanted to shed some light for the other committee members about the implications of a recent evolution in the tax law in France, and why. The answer that we will reach today is important in this regard. So there was a tax law that was passed in Q4 2018 in France, and basically that is saying that if you have organized, so it's all around tax evasion. And so if you have organized an accounting treatment which principally with the principal objective of reducing your tax, then you're able to potentially a criminal prosecution. So it's not just on in front of an administrative court, so not just because of the tax law, but a real criminal prosecution. So some in France think that effectively by concluding that tax uncertainties are liabilities will prevent or will diminish, will reduce the risks of criminal prosecution. Those some are basically the auditors. And one of the reasons is also you need to be aware of that. And it's not new. It has been existing for a very long time in France. The auditors are, in French law, obliged to report to a criminal prosecutor any wrongdoing by a company and by the management of a company. So if you cross the two legislations, it means that, let's assume, that a company has taken a position in the balance sheet, an uncertain tax position, and this uncertain tax position is ultimately challenged. And that for this reason, there is a criminal prosecution. Then the auditors could, I'm not saying it would, but could be also prosecuted for not having declared in advance to the effective criminal prosecution the fact that there might have been a wrongdoing by the company. So, and last but not least, just to add, it's rather subtle, and I'm not a tax person, I'm neither a legal person, but there is a last subtlety, and it is that once the case has been judged, using the provisions of the tax law. It might well be, in some instances, that the administrative court will end up saying the entity is right. So no wrongdoing in accordance with the tax law. But because the law is a bit wider than that, there might be situations by which the criminal prosecutor could still pursue the investigations relating to the criminal wrongdoing. Okay, so to summarize, the question applied in France is no longer an accounting question. It's more a question of splitting responsibilities between various people that might be involved in the life of an entity. So it would be then basically presented, I'm just talking about provision for tax uncertainty. I'm not talking about provision for tax litigation, to be very, very, very clear on that. Just talking about tax uncertainty. Some, the auditors, say that effectively, if you force an entity to account for it as a liability, then it's the responsibility of the entity
to pay,
and no longer theirs. And if the entity or the management of the entity is then criminally prosecuted, they would no longer be considered as an accomplice. Okay? So I think, just for me, and I have a strong view on this paper and the analysis, and for various reasons, but I won't comment on that one now. But I just wanted to alert you on that. It's not just, at least in France. I don't know if there are other jurisdictions. Maybe Brazil could be one. Yeah. Maybe Brazil could be one, because effectively, for various reasons, the chief accountant officer is generally also potentially facing criminal prosecution for any wrong declaration in the tax, in accordance with the tax law in Brazil. So I'm not surprised that Brazil would be the case. There might be other jurisdictions whereby it could be the same. And so it's not just strictly an accounting question.
Thank you for the context. Now, looking at the technical analysis, Bruce.
Thanks. To start,
it's a bit of a question for the start, because I kind of missed the issue. I don't know if I missed the issue on this a bit. I mean,
I've always seen IFRIC 23 as really a recognition and measurement issue, telling us how to recognize and measure the things in IAS 12. Once I'm there, I'm in IAS 12, so IAS 12 and the disclosures that apply and everything that we've done for the last X number of years under IAS 12 applied. So I didn't see the fact that IFRIC 23 doesn't have any disclosure requirements was a conscious decision, because we said, well, all we do is talk about the recognition and measurement of the assets. So to me, when I took a look at this, I mean, to me, this is very simple. All we do is confirming to say, guys, these things are the same assets and liabilities you recognized under IAS 12 before IFRIC 23 came out. We've just added additional guidance to say you need to take into account the uncertainty. Other than that, my understanding is nothing has changed in the presentation and disclosure, nothing should. So even in the agenda decision, when we start going into the IAS 1 and disaggregation, great, but it's not new. And that's why when we start talking about neither IAS 12 nor IFRIC 23 contain requirements for presentation, that's not right. IAS 12 has a whole bunch of requirements for that. So I don't know. To me, this was very simple. If you're measuring these things, you're within IFRIC 23. IFRIC 23 tells you you're in IAS 12 and apply IAS 12 as you always have, unless I missed something on that.
Just to clarify, if it's helpful, what IAS 12 actually has, let me have it. So IAS 12 has no requirements on presentation except for offsetting only. So the reason that we talked about this is the question that was brought to the committee was about the presentation of uncertain tax assets or liabilities.
But it's no different to what we've done in the past.
No.
Okay. So as long as I missed something there.
Yeah, it's only the measurement that's really changed as a consequence of the additional
interpretation. That's what I said. Okay. Yeah. As long as
and we agree with that. It's just that we were trying to answer the question of where are the requirements.
So it's just why I've missed something. Okay.
Guy?
I agree. agree as well that the thought process to that the paper steps through in terms of thinking about this as part of current tax or part of deferred tax, and then the requirements in IS-1 to present current tax and deferred tax was logical, and I would wholly agree with that. The one part of the analysis that I paused on was the part of the analysis about potentially disaggregating and presenting elements separately in the financial statements. And it struck me that could be problematic in some cases. We're often measuring a single tax item, and there's some uncertainty in the measurement of that tax item, depending on how we've defined the unit of account there. But having defined that, I have a single item, and disaggregating that into two parts didn't strike me as necessarily correct, and that perhaps gets revealed, at least in my mind, whereby, if I break out some sort of credit portion of that single item, I'm left with a debit portion, and I'm presenting that separately on the balance sheet, I'm going to show an asset and a credit, and it seems to me if that's a single tax item, I'm overstating my assets, and so I was concerned with some of that disaggregation commentary.
So do you think the agenda decision might be better without that commentary?
Yes.
And I think that doesn't, in a sense, there we were going beyond the question, so I think the agenda can still hang together without that.
Martin.
Yeah, in general, I'm fine with the agenda decision. I mean, with regard to Bertrand, I've a question. I mean, is the fact that you then would put this add-on measurement into other provisions or so, would that help? Or what is your issue around that?
No, what I'm trying to explain is that, I mean, currently, effectively, in France, companies are disaggregating in the balance sheet three items. Provision. It can be provision for tax litigations or provision for tax uncertainties, and they refer to that on paragraph 5C of IS 37. Which answers Bruce's previous question, which acknowledged the fact that there might be provision relating to income tax items. So either provision or current tax liability or deferred tax liability.
So it's clear about these three different characteristics in presentation.
The point we are just making is that if we were to reclassify provisions as either current or deferred tax, it would be for the company the simple acknowledgement of the fact that they effectively reduced their income tax declaration. So it would be like a kind of effective statement that a criminal prosecutor could use against the company and its management. It's what I'm saying. It's just that I tried to explain.
But locally, you are not on IFRS. Just a question. Your local financial statements are not on IFRS.
Yes, but at the same time, the first financial statements. The tax authority is asking for all the consolidated financial statements,
which include the whole world.
Yeah,
and then the French tax authorities interpret that.
Yes, they ask for consolidated financial statements, statutory financial statements, whatever, and the auditor's report. And
the same issue you might have in other jurisdictions, but the question then is IFRS the.
So they my understanding is that they wish for an overall understanding of the situation of the company, which makes sense. I mean, from their perspective, and we have nothing to hide, so we provide the documentation, obviously.
Okay. Bertrand, you had...
Yes. No, it was just to answer Bruce. I think, on this technical issue, I'm not sure IFRS are clear at this stage to answer either current deferred tax or provision current deferred tax. And I think there is a conflict between what Bruce and Guy mentions in their understanding of IS-12 on one hand and the way paragraph 5C, I suppose, of IS-37 is currently written. So let me read. When another standard deals with a specific type of provision, contingent liability or contingent asset, an entity applies that standard instead of this standard, meaning applied IS-12 instead of IS-37. For example, some types of provisions are addressed in standards, and the paragraph B is income taxes, C, IS-12 income taxes. So that is on the basis of this paragraph that French companies, in their vast majority, account for provision for tax uncertainties or tax litigations as a provision in the balance sheet. So that is really clearly stated in IS-37. That is, there might be provisions relating to income taxes. I totally understand the reason why you're saying it's obvious, it's an income tax item, so it should be within a line item which is current income tax or deferred income tax. I perfectly understand that either. So there's a conflict between the two there, I think. And IS-1 is not prescriptive in this issue. I mean, if you refer to, I don't remember the paragraph of IS-1.
54.
So it's help, it will help. Thank you very much.
But doesn't that mean, Bertrand, that IFRIC 23 is actually irrelevant in your issue? It's highlighted it, but you're asking how you...
No, that's why effectively in the agenda paper, the staff is not referring to IFRIC 23. They refer to IS-12, IS-37, IS-1. And I have not mentioned IFRIC 23.
So that's...
No, I agree with you. IFRIC 23 has not brought anything to this issue, I think. But it's not the way the auditors have...
Yeah, but his issue is on the presentation.
Not on the presentation.
Okay, it's not an IFRIC 23 issue.
It has brought on recognition and measurements, but not necessarily on presentation. Yeah.
But that's what I was asking last. Okay.
Yeah, but in France, the auditors are not saying that.
Yeah.
But that's another issue. So if you revert back to paragraph 54 of IS-1, so N is liabilities and assets for current tax as defined in IS-12, income taxes. Then O is deferred tax liabilities and deferred tax assets as defined in IS-12. So that's pretty much that you have to refer to IS-12 for those. And there is a line, L, provisions. And provisions does not refer to anything. So what I don't get from the analysis of the staff is how they come to whereby there is a conflict between two different prescriptions in IS-37 on one hand and IS-12 on the other hand, and nothing specific in IS-1, do they come to answer that provisions for tax uncertainties is necessarily a deferred tax asset or current tax asset? I think in the current wordings of the standard, it's impossible to establish. So if you want this answer, fine, but then there needs to be standard setting. Removing or precising the scoping out in IS-37 and adding something to IS-12. And to end up answering also Bruce's comments on the link between IS-37 and IS-12, if you refer to paragraph 88 of IS-12, paragraph 88 of IS-12 refers on disclosures relating to contingent tax assets and liabilities, and for the disclosures, they link to the prescriptions or to the provisions in IS-37.
Do you refer to provisions?
But I thought that...
No, the paragraph 88, we can read that,
Paragraph 88 deals with contingencies.
Not recognized.
So tax are not, obviously, we're dealing here with situations where
not recognized.
They effectively, no, no, unrecognized, sure, but they effectively revert
so it's not relevant
to
because it applies to contingent.
Well, I was just going
to
say was
just to establish, just putting that, I'm not putting that saying that it's an explanation of why. I'm just saying to, to Bruce, they are, it's an additional link between IS 37 and IS 12. So the two standards are speaking to each other, let's put it that way.
But my understanding of the analysis and the patent is, and this is where I think IFRIC 23 has some relevance, although not, I don't think, inconsistent with what you said, is because IFRIC 23 has now told you what to include in the measurement. What's included in the measurement under 23, it becomes part of current or deferred tax in IAS 12, which then creates the link. And then the contingent bits are the ones left over that 23 didn't tell you to include in the measurement.
I guess the only thing I was just going through trying to find is I don't think we've used the word provision in IFRIC 23.
No.
That's what I'm saying. So okay.
Okay. Tony.
So I agree with the staff analysis. I don't see any tension anywhere in the standards. I think IS 37 tells you it doesn't deal with income taxes. And therefore pushes you back to IAS 12 for recognition and measurement, and IFRIC 23 helps us with that bit. I agree with you, Sue, that what IFRIC 23 does is it makes it very clear that the measurement of a current tax liability includes any element of that that is uncertain. I actually think paragraph 46 of IAS 12 got you there anyway. It says that a current tax liability is the amount of tax due in respect of the current or prior periods, and if you were estimating the amount you would have to pay, you would reflect uncertainties in that estimate. So I think that makes it clear that the uncertainty is part of the current tax liability or a deferred tax liability. And then you go to IAS 1, and that tells you there is a line for current tax liabilities, which I think includes the uncertainty. I agree with the staff. I don't actually see that there's a tension. A bit like Guy, I can understand why there might be circumstances where you could disaggregate the number, but it does raise a number of questions about unit of account and so on. So I'd be happy without that paragraph in there.
Reinhardt.
I'll be brief because my comments are very consistent with what Tony and Guy said. Just an additional point, one of the advantages of having been on the committee for a while is I recall that when we started our journey on IFRIC 23, paragraph 88 of IS 12 was one of the issues as to whether uncertain tax positions were in the scope of IS 37 or the scope of IS 12. And certainly the early staff papers explored that concept, and as a committee we agree that they clearly are in the scope of IS 12. And so long way around saying I think that's the background to that, and so consistently agree with the staff analysis. And like Tony and Guy, I would support removing that paragraph.
Right. With that, can I ask you question two? So does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation not to add the matter to the standard setting agenda? Oh, sorry, Bonnie, did you want to say something?
Yeah, sorry, I was a bit delayed. Just kind of piecing together what everyone is saying. The one issue that I have is in IAS 12, current tax is defined as the amount of income taxes payable or recoverable in respect to the taxable profit tax loss for a period. An uncertain tax position, in my mind, I guess the way I think about it is there's a risk it could be payable, but it may not be payable. And it, in my mind, it doesn't clearly fall in that definition. So I don't have the same... I guess I don't agree with the staff's analysis because to me it's a recognized contingency. And I understood where the staff was going to, but when I read the definition of current tax, I don't see how that encompasses an uncertain position that is either a position that a company has taken, that perhaps there's some risk that it could be clawed back by the authorities, or the unclear interpretation of the law, which there is some uncertainty. So it's not payable or recoverable. There's an uncertainty related to it. So which, to me, kind of informs the view that I would have on the deferred tax side as well. So I don't think it's entirely clear in IS 12 from a presentation perspective.
So you want to try and answer that specifically?
Yeah. So Bonnie, if it's helpful, because we looked very, you know, closely at this link. So I agree. So the definition of current tax in paragraph 5 of IS 12 refers into the amount of income taxes payable in respect of the taxable profit loss for the period. Then taxable profit is defined. And I think the important link through that Sue mentioned from IFRIC 23 is if you look at paragraph 4 of IFRIC 23, it says, blah, 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 this interpretation clarifies just recognition and measurement, of course, but the recognition and measurement requirements in IS 12 when there's uncertainty, and in such a circumstance, you're recognising and measuring your current and deferred tax asset or liability based on taxable profit tax loss, you know, which is in the definition, determined applying this interpretation. So those words combined also with the words Tony referred to in IS 12 said, when you've got uncertain tax treatments, IFRIC 23 is helping you work out how you incorporate uncertainty. And when you do that, you're incorporating uncertainty into your application of the recognition and measurement requirements in IS 12, which means when you're working out your taxable profit tax loss, which feeds through to your definition of current tax.
I don't think that's clear in the standards. I would not have come to that conclusion. So
And me neither. I mean, it's exactly what I
said. As a practitioner, that's not the way I would have read it. That's not the way we have read it.
Uncertainty is not necessarily payable.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, question two.
So does... please be stopped so you could get that in.
Does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation not to add the matter to the standard setting agenda? If I could get a show of hands, please.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
And we've already had the suggestion from several committee members that we delete the paragraph in the draft agenda decision that was dealing with aggregation or disaggregation.
The next to last.
Yeah. So page 16, just the one that comes before the conclusion.
Subject to that deletion, can I get a show of hands for who supports the tentative agenda decision?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
All right, so we're running slightly late, so let's take a 10-minute break and reconvene at 5:00.